appreciate the opportunity to present at the high level the mandate and operations of the agency. As the chair has alluded, we will come back to present the results in time. But for now, just to present what it is that we do as a corporation. Our mandate, chair, is really to broaden and to deepen access in the affordable housing sector, especially for people that are classified as people who have got income between 1,500 and 15,000 per month. Now, this is a segment of the market which is very challenging in terms of access, simply because, as it has been put in other statements, they don't earn enough to qualify for a mortgage if they want to buy, and they earn too much to qualify for a subsidy. So everything that the ministry does, it has to do with money that gets to be repaid. If the household is not able to repay that money, then it's not in the target segment that the ministry is actually doing business in. And in terms of our objectives, firstly, it's really to expand the housing finance activities, just to make sure that we create a platform so that those people, here we're talking about teachers, nurses, we're talking about a lot of public employees, blue-collar workers, that have a reasonable income, have a choice in terms of their income. And their choice would be either they want to build a house on an incremental basis, depending on how low their salary is, or they could be, the choice could be they could rent a house, be social housing, or they could rent a private rental in the inner city. And if their income levels are higher, then they could actually buy the property that is newly developed. So, in other words, we are creating an option, a choice for households within this income bracket of 1,500 and 15,000. And so that's why we provide directly financing through the retail intermediary. We remain wholesale. That's like DBSA is wholesale, IDC is wholesale. They don't operate at a retail level. So we provide this finance through retail intermediaries, and on the other side, we provide this finance for direct development of housing stock. I think when we spoke about SRA earlier, 95% of what SRA does in terms of social housing development, we provide the top-up grant. In fact, it is in their act, in the SRA act, that initially would provide the top-up finance for that. In fact, we are also the security for government because we take as a security, we take the development itself and make sure that that development remains maintained so that it can be reused again for rental purposes. But also part of our mandate is to make sure that we get private sector, especially banks in this case, they increase their lending in the segment of the market. Banks normally are driven by profit motive, and they will only do something if it's given the return they want. Now, from an initiative standpoint, our job is to, how can we facilitate to see that the increase and sustain their lending in this market? We use various instruments. Some of them are risk enhancement instruments to try and bring banks into play, because truly, scale, which means the deep pockets are not with government, they are with the private sector. And if we can increasingly bring private sector on the table, the very things it will be for us to address, especially this segment of the market at an increased scale. And so that is why part of our innovative approach to funding, we don't just depend on the money we lend out, but we try and find ways to say how can we bring banks on an increased basis so that they lend. They've got a national footprint, big balances, they've got infrastructure, they've got the systems, and the question is how can we draw them so that they can come a little bit down where they normally need to on their own. But also part of our medical institution is this process of mobilize funding. It's not enough, I think, in terms of funding in human settlement space. Therefore, we mobilize funding by partnering with other multilateral agencies. And to that extent, we have European, right now we're talking to the African Development Bank, but we have other agencies like AFD, like EIB, which are all European, to bring money into this particular segment of the market so that there's increased funding that is made available in this segment of the market. So, an apology is that this slide you don't have, only this slide that you don't have. But what it does is fund up just initiatives into strategy, so that by mistake. But we were established in 1996, and we were capitalized once by government. In the 8 years, we've never come back to the fiscus to ask for money. It's only now that we come back to say we need to recapitalize. But that's exactly the life of development finance institution. DBA does the same, IGC does the same, ESCOM does the same. At some point, a DFI is set up on a self-sustaining basis. That's why we've never come to government in 18 years, because what has sustained us, the end that we've made over the years, that we now back into the business. And also we are credit rated as an institution. We're locally credit rated, and we are currently talking to some of the international rating agencies, so that the credit rating are not just going ball of hands. So what we do, we blend what government gives us as capital, we blend it with the borrow fund so that we can create a funding pool that can be made available in this type of a mandate. Also, our approach is national, almost like in every province, where our intermediaries are or developments are taking place with funds. So this actually is very succinctly speaks to who we are. In terms of business model, the business model of initiative which has been recondemned as of January last year, 2013, where external parties to come back and go and ask the market, not ask us, go to the market and say, are we relevant? Are we actually making a contribution in this sector of the market? This was the confirmation that actually we're playing on two sides of the market. The demand side, where we're dealing with the end user, and for the end user it's about access, as I said, and also because the human settlement, our ministry asked us to be a participating agent, implementing agent for FLIS. We're also dealing with the challenge of affordability. So in that regard, we provide wholesale finance, and we find ways in which we can deal with the issue of access and the issue of affordability. And on the supply side, we provide direct financing to projects. As I did indicate earlier, any social housing project initiatives, money also goes into that. But also, when Honorable Chair, we have significantly done, I think, more than any other party, is financing inner city regeneration throughout, especially in Kaupin, in Devon, and also in the Eastern Cape. And maybe one can actually boast in that regard that all major inner city redevelopment initiatives have been part of that. Either we funded it ourselves, but also we've been instrumental in facilitating creating confidence in the segment of the market so that either banks came later on or even foreign funders that partnered with us to provide that. But also the supply side, we do provide incremental loans, which is similar to what World Housing Loan Fund does, except that we're doing it in the urban area. They are doing it more in the rural. We are doing that in the urban area. That is the same model. Sometimes clients which have got a bigger footprint may be coming to both of us asking for funding. And I may also indicate that from 1996, when we were formed, to 2000, the Rural Housing Loan Fund used to be a division of NHS. So which actually naturally, in terms of approach throughout the whole country, it shares the same purpose that it does today, except that after that, in 2000, it was actually located with the government's rural development strategy, and that's why it was separate from NHFC. But otherwise, the incremental housing loan is actually part of the portfolio that we deal with. Chair, I will skip the strategic methods, but I think what I'd like to highlight is that the NHFC's capital structure, it means how we are positioned to be able to do to fulfill our mandate, depends a lot on being appropriately capitalized so that we can raise additional funding that may be needed to the market in the private market instead of coming government. And also what is key, because self-sustaining issue of pricing is very key, because much of it promotes affordability, that's why we can actually be catalyst to using this as an affordability enhancer for the households, especially in this market. Pricing does come into the equation because we have to sustain our business. And I think some of the projects that we shared with you. As far as the ACP is concerned, actually I'm going to just take us through the ACP side of things.
So you can share, the is our CFO, and she'll be one taking us through the end of the project.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first slide basically deals with the ACP as approved by the Minister, and in line of the review of the engineering many opportunities to review, and then just an overview of the ACP as approved. But certain aspects will consider both the operating environment as internally as externally, that informed, revised ACP that we will present. And I'm just going to go through this because I think that's right. I think maybe from an internal point of view, what is important, it also highlighted by Shra earlier, during the last financial year, the MHRC experienced a liquidity challenge. And maybe just to give context to that is, we usually have the funds from the job summit previously, and it amounted to about 420 million rand. And the National Treasury Department asked us to return the funds, which happened towards the end of the last financial year. But simultaneously, they also undertook to give us the 230 requirement request from SHRA. I mean, as you speak now, all the requirements have been met. And the CFO was just telling me it's been loaded into the system, and the funds should, you know, should be charged by the end of this week. What is also happening as an outcome of our reorganization process is both the restructuring of the NHST as well as CDCHT, which is a volume subsidiary company, been approved, and those have been updated in the revised ACP. So this slide basically gives an overview. First of all, our developmental impact. What we report on is housing opportunities created over the 5-year period, the number of jobs created is outlined, and the assumption for the jobs that we use is the formula, you know, an outcome of research done by the department for every 1 year creates about 11 jobs. So that is the assumption that informs the calculation. Then we've also dedicated over the next 5 years under the broad, almost DEE, empowerment, and it speaks to women, youth, as well as the, you know, broader DEE beneficiaries. The next is the third line. The funding impact of that is the fund that we actually make available to the industry through disbursement, and as a by the CFO, before we put the money in, we also able to leverage from the private sector. In through electric funds, similar bigger projects, also through partnerships that we have, joint ventures, we leverage a further amount, which is the second line to the leverage fund, thus giving us the total impact. Key to this is the funding assumptions they've explained. We are relying on the departments over the period for over about the 2 cities that we gave in this year, another billion over the 5 years. That will enable us to leverage an additional 700 through funding arrangements with our partners, and that's giving us the total funding requirements over the 5 years. In this line, we've tried to link it to the outcomes of the NTF targets that were set by the Bayou settlements. One of our key outputs is social housing units, as explained earlier, also linking with SHRA. And you might recall that same target is then set there of the 27. And out of our funding is what they enable us to do, which basically converts 12,000 of the 27,000 SHRA targets. One of our other key outputs is outright rental units, which is the target that's been set for the period is 25,000, of which over the time we see ourselves contributing 18,000 units, and it translates. Is 65%. The third item that we see ourselves contributing is the broader total affordable housing units. And these are through some of our investment partners. We have equity or investments in partnership with Old Mutual, where The outcome of this is mortgage lending, so they contribute to decline as well as some through intermediaries. So this line produces about 70,000 over the next 5 years, and then the incremental loans is explained earlier by the CEO. So to the total affordable target of about 110, we see ourselves contributing 40% to their target. This is then translating it into the funding effect, again, into the programs that we have, social housing, private rental, as well as affordable housing. So over the 5 year period, our investment into social housing will be 1.1 billion. To private rental will be just over a billion. Affordable housing, 1.3 billion, and incremental housing, about 131 million. Coming to a total of 3.7 billion, that would be the financial investment into the affordable housing market. And then one of our other programs is the leveraging that we report on. So with us putting in about the 3 billion, we leverage another 3.6 billion. So our total leverage funds come to 6 billion over the 5 years. We are the implementing agents of the FLIS program. And the results just give a sense of the performance or the targets that are set over the next 5 years. So we see ourselves contributing 21%, and this again is through affordable housing, both the target set by the department. What is also important to note on this, for each one of these that we, the fund participants also manage some kind of checking, which is displayed in the bottom row, an additional 3.8 billion from the private sector. Because at the end of the day, the approval for the mortgage loan is with the private sector. This just outlines the required budget, both from an operational cost. So we're looking at 29 million in operational cost to fund the project, as well as the disbursement. The bottom line is basically the subsidy, which is 632 million over the 5 year period. Maybe how that all then translates into financial impact, maybe it's just next slide to highlight some of the key drivers. Our main source of income is lending income, and the key drivers are the growth in the disbursement. We have assumed a moderate interest rate increase over the 5 years. One of the key areas of development in the corporation is our strategic investment portfolio. And because of the structure, what you might see, some of the contributions only come through in the later years. Through our subsidiary, we also have development of projects. So if you see sale of houses, it's CTC, actually Cape Town Community Housing Corporation. In line with strategic decision, we also, they are going through a restructuring, and we're only funding existing projects currently, so you might see it's reflected in the trend as well. Impairments is driven by the growth in the houses portfolio. On average, over the 5 years, it's not been 1.5, so that includes almost credit loss ratio of the 2%, also taking the market conditions into consideration, and thereafter we assume a 2.5 credit loss ratio. As mentioned previously, the operational expenses, particularly in the 15 year, does include the cost of restructuring and the benefits we see in the later years, and the finance cost is just in line with the increased gearing from our arrangements with our strategic partners. So if you maybe just go back to the previous slide, and it shows the impact statement. So if you look at the lending income, the trend, I think on average growth that we see and how they all translate into the bottom line. Because of the elasticity increase borrowing, you will see an increase, slight increase in the finance cost over the period. What we've also done, one of our strategic objectives is to reset financial targets as well to make sure that we remain sustainable over the 5 year period. So this all informs at the end of the day, we still need to reset financial targets as well. So if you look at where we see the organization going, it's basically from where we are now at the end of March, a 2.3 billion company. If we are successful, we targeting to be a 5 billion company at the end of the 5 years. Again, key drivers are our loan efforts throughout this person that we see coming through. And that's the last slide, to just show you some of the projects that we've done.
Thank you very much to the MHF team for that presentation and clarity. Let me help to manufacture them.
Who's that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was just making a follow-up on question of honorable guys, because if you check the long term of the NSPRC, the long term of the sustainability, your statement says the sustainability of the SRC, the therefore will depend on its building of the reserve and externally satisfying. Yes, I wanted to check on NSDRC. Do they have a vacancy?
NSDRC? We are on NHFC now.
NHFC has no, NSFC. Yeah, it means those NS, that's why.
Okay. It's my initial, that's why.
I know the vacancy, they have a vacancy.
All right, thank you very much. If you can probably respond to those few questions. Remember, honorable members, they're coming back on the 14th for their annual performance that they must present to us on the 14th of October. Yeah, they are coming back.
structural immunity. I made a statement that in 18 years we've not come back for recapitalization. We have put for the next 5 years a request for 1 billion rand. And that will take us for the next 10 years because we already supplemented with additional funding that is based externally from government. So that will be in terms of the NGPS, the next 5 years as well. In terms of payment, our collection rate, because we provide two kinds of loans. They are the what we call medium term, 5 years loans, especially the ones that are incremental housing. So that we get paid within 5 years, and our collection level is about, say, 95%. And they also provide 20-year term loans, and for social housing, private rental, and also for ownership, 20 years. So, also on the same basis, our total collection is between 95 and 90%. If you may answer the question,
We do have vacancies, but what the organization is doing now through the restructure that was referred to, we are looking at only resourcing the vacancies that are then critical. So we analyze the job and when we feel we can upskill the team members, that's what we're trying to do. And maybe primarily the reason for doing that is to save costs. So we will not fill all the vacancies. For the past 2 years now, the corporation has gone as far as even sharing of PAs across the executive members. So the vacancies that are in existence, we will only see if it's a very critical role. But when we can upskill, that's what we're doing.
Thank you very much. Those questions I'm hoping that you were asking so that you prepare yourselves when we are analyzing the IAM's efforts. Thank you. NHFC, we now finish with you for now. We are going to go now to the Housing Development Agency. I'm hoping that they are ready and very ready. You don't have to leave when you finish, but if you have to, you can go. But otherwise, we don't mind having you here.
Services and then Johan
responsible for land planning. Between us, Chair, we have 95 years of experience in the development sector and 27 years in the HDA. So even though the HDA is only 5 years old, we've managed to retain our expertise and run through by keeping our staff over that period of time. That's the overview of what I want to do today, just run through all those areas and basically the organizational structure, and then that was looking at our annual performance plan, our adjustments, and performance highlights today. So I'm going to try something which I hope works. We always try and bring something new to the portfolio committee.
Finding the land into smart and getting legal rights to the site. A team of developers management has had its planning stage of view.
Services, and I won't go into the
on that.
This is pretty much the house value chain that you saw in the video, and the blue blocks indicate where the HDA specifically works, although we do a lot of the other areas as well. But specifically around land identification, we would get a request, can you validate this land for us, who owns it, how much, what benefit can we do on it? That's a 50 criteria for good land development. And then we're involved in the land release and the housing establishment. And then we work with other areas, other sectors of parts of the sector to do the various other parts of the value chain. But that's basically what you would see any project doing. It should also be what any strategic planners would be doing. They would be assessing the housing need, they would then have to look at the land need, they would then identify and acquire the land, and then they would do a development based on that identification. Same kind of activity in this particular slide, and essentially those four areas constitute what we consider the land, what we call the land pipeline. And what we've managed to do in a number of provinces is work with them to say, over a 3 to 5 year period, what are your planning requirements, what are your human settlement requirements, let's put them into a land pipeline. And we managed to succeed in a number of projects in getting them to do that. Where do we get land? We get public land from national departments, as in our main source, provincial departments, local authorities, state-owned enterprises. To some extent, we've got some land from private owned trusts or companies, and there have been some situations where we've dealt with communal land. Where we perform, well, I'll come to that in a minute, in terms of our actual performances, we release over 11,000 hectares of state-owned land for human settlement development. That exceeds our target for the last 5 years, which was 6.50. So we achieved and exceeded our specific outcome target. We currently own 924 hectares of land. We work with a joint coordinating committee on land release, which was established under the outcome 8 agreements, as a coordinating committee between the three major landholding departments, human settlements, COCTA, public works, public enterprises, rural development. So there has been a committee that has been working. It has discussed how one releases land, and that has been responsible for, amongst other things, a consideration of a compensation agreement, which starts with on what basis land owned by the state can be released. And that relates to the last point there, which is that we've agreed what the criteria are for identifying land, what's the procedure for the transfer of state land to the HDA. And that has come forward in the master special plan that we've been talking about, and I think showed to you at the recent workshop. One of the other big activities that we've been involved is informal settlements, and essentially what we've got there is a series of tools where we're able to go into a settlement and quite quickly assess who's in it, what they do, what are the transport requirements, what are the social infrastructure availabilities and requirements, and some of that has been moved into actual development plans, which is a very important area for us to be going to, because if we're going to make a big impact on the backlog, informal settlement upgrade is very important. I've talked a little bit about our spatial analysis systems. They're very sophisticated and they are available to you, and we're happy to do training on those areas as well. We've got agreements, 17 agreements with the provinces and local authorities, and with both the entities on who we were studying project we took them over 5 years ago, and our view, which I think has been confirmed by the provinces involved, is that they're now operating well and delivering. Again, another indication of the GIS capacity we've got. Basically, this is a map of every single settlement that the department has supported. All the informal settlements, 2,200 that are around the country, we've mapped them, as well as an investment index, which indicates where most investment is going to in the country. So that what can start to say, you either do or don't want to invest in particular areas. And again, that's some of the basis on which the master special plan is based on the criteria that come from master special plan come from.
indication of the land that has been acquired by the agency, and not only have we acquired the land from the point of view of raw land acquisition, but also from the point of view of land that is settled, so that you can get involved in tenure upgrading, because in many situations you have land that has been state-owned land that has been invaded or settled in one way or another, but of course people don't have legal rights to that land, and what we wish to do is get the acquisition and then start to assist with the planning and transfer of land to the occupants. The next table talks about private and state-owned land that we've acquired, and there the total is 2,296 hectares with a potential for 30,000 units. And again, that's something we always try and estimate, is what will the end use of the land be. The next series of slides, which I'm not going to go into any detail, is really an indication of what our macro indicators were for this current financial year. And in general, they're about establishing national sector-wide safety plans, which is now kind of morphing into the master social plan, of which you'll hear quite a lot more. The acquisition of land, and the target for this year is 2,000 hectares. Just remember that figure when it comes to what we've done so far. So 2,000 hectares there to be achieved for this year. Projects in the various departments, various provinces, big projects like the N2 or Zanablu, our target is 10. Supporting 13 provinces and local authorities, so that's the 9 plus the 3 metros that we're targeting. IGR protocols, we've mentioned that we've got 17, we're targeting getting 32. And a priority housing development area, which is a mechanism for assisting development, which I can go into at some other time, which has recently been promulgated by the Minister as a way in which we can fast track development, and we're targeting doing one pilot in the course of this year. We need to adjust based on the demand that is being made on us now, and essentially these previous targets are changed slightly, and I'm not going to go through them all, but based on the targets for this year, which would be also for the next NTSF, which would be 1.4 million housing opportunities, 50 catalytic projects, and 10,000 hectares, we are now looking to change our APPs to say, okay, we stay with the target of an unqualified audit, we will establish a business plan which will facilitate the development of the HCA as a whole. From corporate services point of view, we're very much a performance-based organization. There are performance contracts in place for every member of the HDA. There's a biannual performance review happens in April where a performance bonus is reviewed, and in the midterm, which is coming up September, October, we will again look at what people are doing on the basis of their performance contracts, but we're very definitely a performance-based organization. And then the land strategy has been developed into a master spatial plan as a big issue, and the other big issue I'm not going to go through all the rest of you is for us to assist with the development of the 50 catalytic projects, as well as to develop the 10,000 hectares, and those would be the major focuses of the HDA going forward. From a financial point of view, two things that are there. The first is that just to point out that we are funded by three sources in the main: the national grant from the national department, which obviously you have an influence over. We get income from the provinces where we have agreements, and then of course we get management fees again where we are working with provinces or on projects. And our annual budget for this year is at 193 million. I should indicate that we have asked for an additional 66 million to expand our operations to meet the minister's requirements. And for this year, and an extra 145 million for the next financial year. So if we go back to what our obligations were for this year and where we got to at the end of quarter one, which we've just completed. Remember, we were expected to get 2,000 hectares for the year. We're already at 14.35 hectares. We are working on the master spatial plan, and we, in intend to have that to be formed in Mem by the 30th of October, which is in 100 days, is up. We're assisting the National Department with the planning for the city catalytic projects. We're working quite hard with the situation here in Rwanda, and we are very involved in the settlements component of the National Mining Towns, and again, we talked about that at the last workshop that we were at. So, Madam Chair, members, that's our presentation. Just one last thing, Madam Chair, we will be giving to each committee member a little packet of our publication, one of which, and this is the book of, but this is the 5-HHCA 5-year book. It's called The End of the Beginning. I'd like to give it to you, and then there will be one in every packet that's given to every member.
Thank you very much, Health and Development Agency, for that presentation and those promises for delivery of one, the GVT to the members and the board. And just for you, any clarities that you want to ask and questions before we wait for lunch? Okay.
Functions. that you showed us, those blue colors, they are greens and yellows. I want to find out why your project planning is not linked to project packaging. Instead, it's linked to township establishment. If you could just clarify that. And then the other one on the next page, on your coordinating committee with the state land release, do you negotiate for donations before you come? Because if the problem would be for us, the government, to pay another government the money, every municipalities, we argued that during the budget debate, the municipalities are asked to pay those, supposed to be done by the entities of government. The other one, share would be on the
last one. I hope the last one.
Yes, the last one on the bullet number 3, where you talk about your sign implementation protocols on with metros and which metros are those who did not indicate to close. I'd like to know that they didn't find why. Thank you.
Another topic.
Thank you, Chair. Just a brief one. On this one, the additional mandates. This one of being the implementing agent of the Western Cape Public Energy System. Is it limited to Western Cape or the specific reason for that, or is it possible to extend to other provinces? Thank you.
Thank you. No. I'm not commissioning for hands. I was just asking. Yes, thank you very much. Over to you.
So. Thanks, Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Mukhwadi to answer the land questions, and I'll deal with the others.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, honorable members, in terms of land that's administered by chiefs, there are from time to time instances where traditional leaders would demand or require payment in exchange for releasing land for development. But the current arrangement we have with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform is that state land gets released for housing for free, so we're not supposed to pay. So there hasn't been any instance where we've paid the traditional leader in exchange for accessing land for housing development. Bulk of the land, as far as I can recall, I think there's been significant land released, state land released in the Northwest Province, and mainly in the mining towns, that is your Rustenburg and Majeng areas, spread in other ways. And that's primarily because we're trying to respond to critical settlement challenges occasioned by the fact that there's been mushrooming of informal settlements, and I think moreover, or more, and again, the fact that, I mean, that the number of settlements, existing settlements that require settlement or tenure upgrading to ensure that the current communities get targeted at the end of the day in respect of the properties that they are currently occupying. Expropriation, we have not yet expropriated a single property, but there have been instances where we've attempted to expropriate, but because over time we have, I think, mastered the art of negotiations. From time to time we do negotiate until we manage to be landowners to agree to market-related valuations. There are, of course, I think, few in the pipeline where we will be asking the minister to give us permission to expropriate. State land doesn't come for human settlements or get released for human settlements for free. Both by your National Public Works Department and also the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the statistics that we are projecting up there, that is all land that we got for free. In other ways, these are properties that are donated directly for human settlements, and there's donation agreement, not sale agreements, but donation agreements signed to access these properties for human settlements. I think I've tried to.
In relation to the other issues, perhaps I remember we can refer you to our website. You don't need either a stick or a thing. You can just download it on the internet. I'm sure you are electronically enabled in that way. So, on the question of KZN and the officers, in fact, this week we signed our agreement with KZN, and the adverts for a program manager to establish an office in KZN will happen in the next couple of weeks. So we will be establishing an office. But we have been working particularly around the area of land assembly, in particular, in KZN. and we've done a little bit of work with them on pipeline prep planning. So that is happening in KZN. Around the issue of the metros, we have signed agreements with Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, Nelson Mandela. We have been negotiating with Mangaung for some time, and then we have a range of interactions with other metros. The province has been our major area of operation while we've been establishing, and the metros must be the next area of activity. I think the question around the Western Cape was around the bucket eradication program. And there, essentially, the department allocated different parts of the country to different institutions to do. And Western Cape was allocated to the HDA because of our existing infrastructure here. I think Shapika answered those, all the questions that were asked.
Thank you very much for indulging us. Honorable members and colleagues, tell us to just break for lunch, but I want to ask that the lunch will reduce it to 30 minutes instead of an hour, because everybody is here, so that we don't waste time. So we come back at 1:30, so that we continue with the presentation. Can we break for lunch now?
What time is it?